All right, and welcome to The Fast Track with John and Zach. I, of course, am your host, John McCarthy, and with me, as always, is my co-host and good friend, Zach Lanning. How are we doing, Zach?
Doing all right. Good to be here. Second time around.
Yeah, I'm surprised we're still focused enough to be doing this.
Yeah, normally speak
for
yourself.
Normally we give up on plans after two times.
That's true, yeah. Good on us, huh?
Well, people don't know us that well, so. All right, I guess one of the main things that I've heard today in sports is it's the 20th anniversary of ESPN. Mm-hmm. And they released a top 20 athletes over the last 20 years. And that's all people were talking about on the different shows today, on Mike and Mike, Around the Horn. And I'm just going to list a couple of the names that were on. I'll give you the top 10.
Sure.
And let's see if we agree with them, disagree, who they left off and whatnot. Number one was Michael Jordan, followed up by LeBron James, Tiger Woods, Tom Brady, Roger Federer, Serena Williams, Peyton Manning, Kobe Bryant, Michael Phelps, and Derek Jeter. It's the top 10. Any names strike you right off the bat?
I mean, just on principle, I don't think Tom Brady should be anywhere on the list because I hate Tom Brady, but it does not matter. I mean, he's been very dominant, so I'm just, you know, obviously joking around. But I'd have to agree with the, you know, most of it pretty much. I like Jordan number 1. But you don't like Jordan number 1?
It's just if it's the last 20 years, that's cutting out the majority of his prime. Like 20 years ago, you're talking about the tail end of Jordan's career when he came back from baseball and he wore the number 45. I mean, he won 2 championships and I believe 3 scoring titles in that time. So he should be on the list, but...
You're saying he hasn't been dominant as an owner of a franchise recently, John? You're saying he hasn't...
Lance Stevenson was a really great choice. I wouldn't say dominant there, but I just don't see how you could put Michael Jordan ahead of Tiger Woods.
I mean, this is just such a hard category for me. I'm trying to wrap my mind around this. Like, just... Dominant, how do you define dominant? How long do you have to be dominant for? How long? I mean, Michael Jordan was one of the best athletes, and he was playing within the last 20 years. So, I mean, how do you count this?
The way I took this is you can't count anything that happened more than 20 years ago. If it's the last 20 years, then the beginning of Jordan's career is North Carolina days aren't there, his rookie of the years, when he was getting knocked out of the playoffs but still scoring 30, 40 some odd points. I mean, I'm not saying take him off the list, but... Number one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think ESPN kind of fixates on certain athletes, and they, you know, just everyone would want to see Jordan on the list, and Jordan number one is the easy choice. I feel like, you know, otherwise you start getting into some muddy waters here. It's easy to look and say, I mean, I am surprised you didn't mention Tiger Woods. I think if you look at a single sport and a single athlete in that sport who has been the most dominant athlete, I'd have to say Tiger Woods. I mean, he has not been great recently in the public mind. True. He's been injured a lot. He's been hurt a lot. But, I mean, you have to... There was no one better than Tiger Woods for a very long time in golf. He is still one of the best players.
When any tournament, it was, do you take Tiger or the field?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't do that anymore. I don't know about you, but I don't think you could say, like, oh, do I take Rory or the field? I'm going to take the field over any golfer at this time.
Yeah. It's just weird. The weird, like, groupings to me. You got a couple, like, a lot of basketball guys in here. You have 2 tennis players in the top 10, Roger Federer and Serena Williams. Well, I guess it can be argued they've both been pretty dominant. I mean, with Federer, though, you have Nadal the whole time who's been there, who may not have, you know, won as much as Federer, but he always beat Federer when he came to, like, on clay and stuff.
I guess you could throw Federer in there because, yeah, like you said, he had Nadal, but he had Murray as his competition. Now he has Djokovic. So I guess he kept himself relevant even when all these other guys were challenging him for being the top tennis player. But I guess in the top 10, you got a couple individual sports, like guys who competed in individual sports, not teams. You talk about Tiger, number 3, Federer, 5, Serena, 6, and Michael Phelps coming in at 9th.
Mm-hmm.
Is it easier to make the top list here? If you competed in an individual sport, it's easier to dominate, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think if you're in an individual sport like swimming or tennis or golf, it's much easier because you're just kind of, you can get it better and you're playing against the field, and it kind of depends on, you know, what the talent is around you and things like that, and you don't rely on anyone else to make you good. Like, Tom Brady would not have been as dominant as he was. You know, he's a very good quarterback. He's, you know, but he would not have been as dominant as he was if he didn't have pieces around him in football. Like, if you don't have an offensive line in football, Tom Brady would not be a good football player.
And not
player.
Only players. So, I mean, you have to attribute some of his success to playing in the Belichick system.
Oh, yeah, for
so,
sure.
Yeah, you have a coach in that.
Yeah,
regard,
I mean, when you look, it's
helps.
I'm thinking if you're talking dominant in their sport, I mean, the entire top 10, 20 should be individual sports. It's very, very difficult to be, which makes it, I guess, more impressive if you were labeled a dominant player in a team sport like football. Basketball is a little easier because there's a lot more one-on-one, I think.
You can really showcase your skills.
Yeah, like if you're a LeBron and a Kobe and or Jordan, like, you know, it's very easy to do that. I think Derek Jeter, I'm a huge fan of Derek Jeter since I was the day I was born. Yankee fans, I love Derek Jeter. I don't think he deserves to be on this list.
I have to agree with him. Not top 10, at least. Like maybe falling down lower on.
I don't think anywhere on this list.
I mean, let me double check that. He's the highest ranked baseball player on this list. I'll read you the next 10 because it was the top 20. After Jeter, Shaq was number 11. Lionel Messi was 12. Lance Armstrong, 13. Tim Duncan, 14. Brett Favre, Usain Bolt, Floyd Mayweather Jr., Mia Hamm, Barry Bonds, and then Sidney Crosby topped out the list at number 20.
See, that's all those surprised me. I mean, if you're going to put soccer on, if you're going to include soccer on here, then there had to be a lot more than Lionel Messi on there. Like, I mean, you're going to talk Cristiano Ronaldo. You're talking guys that are, you know,
I guess
like rivaling Messi for most dominant player in that sport, but you're just going to put Messi on there? That's so random and arbitrary.
I guess it's just Messi's career has been a little longer, but I mean, you can't knock out.
They've been going back and forth. They have, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo had a much better year this year than Messi did. So that's really interesting to me.
What bothered me here, and I don't know if you were in the room, I was talking about this before we started. You put Derek Jeter number 10, and I'm a huge Jeter fan as well as you. But if you're going to include guys like Lance Armstrong and Barry Bonds, how do you not put Alex Rodriguez on the list, even higher than Derek Jeter? Because in the last 20 years, if you take out the steroid scandal and the lying and recent stuff with Rodriguez, he has to be the most dominant baseball player over the last 20 years.
Yeah, I'm hard pressed to think of anyone else who has played better. I mean, I'm trying to think of names here, but if you're gonna put Bonds and you're gonna put Lance Armstrong on there, you have to have A-Rod.
Exactly.
It's either all or nothing.
I have
no
problem if you want to leave him out because of that. If you say, hey, you can't be the top 20 athlete because you cheated, but then don't put guys like Lance Armstrong and Barry Bonds in the mix.
That's what upsets me about this list, though. Is on ESPN's part, this is such like a soft list. Like you know what I mean? Like it's such a fluff piece. It's unbelievable. I don't think they really like thought any of this stuff through. It was what athletes are the hottest names and who people like. I was surprised Johnny Manziel wasn't on it, to be honest, and ESPN made the list. Like, it's unbelievable just looking at that. That upsets me because they really, you know, how can you have two guys who you know, quote-unquote, like, cheaters, obviously, but not have A-Rod and all these things. They really just put together, like, you know, who's the most popular athlete among people who are watching right now. Just put out a list.
And polarizing as well, because you have LeBron James number two. Don't get me wrong, LeBron James belongs on this list, and by the end of his career, I'm willing to say he'll be number one on this list. I know a lot of people will disagree with me on that, but how do you have Kobe Bryant farther down than LeBron if we're talking the last 20 years? That spans almost all of Kobe's career, you're talking.
Yeah.
And Kobe Bryant will go down as one of the closest rivals to Michael Jordan when you're talking skills.
I think Kobe definitely goes higher than LeBron on this list. I think, I mean, tell me, you know, if I'm being too much of a homebody here, but I think Eli Manning should be on this list somewhere. He's won two Super Bowls over Tom Brady. That's pretty dominant. You know, he's two for two Super Bowl appearances.
I mean, I put Eli Manning on mine, but I am a homer, and I'll admit that right now. One of the other names on here that really confused me is, I know I'm one of the only people to believe it, but Floyd Mayweather Jr. gets to be on the top 20 list already? Like, I understand he's a dominant boxer. And this Pacquiao fight, that's why I feel like he's on here. This is more publicity now. Hey, wait, Floyd Mayweather, he's 16th on the list, and his fight's coming up May 2nd. Yeah, I had to double check that one. Just so all the people listening at home, we actually have some help now producing this podcast. So shouts out to our tech staff.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, we didn't give them mics, so you won't hear them. Don't worry about that.
That was kind of mean, dude. I don't know, you bring it up and then...
Well, I mean, I told you, this one, I want to change our whole format here. I had to listen to myself last week after our first episode, and I did not like the way I sounded. I did not like my radio voice here, so I decided, forget trying to be professional. I'd much rather just sit and have a conversation.
I did want to bring up one person. We're going to have Floyd Mayweather Jr. in here. As boxing, fine. Boxing, and if my personal opinion, it's not that relevant. I don't really care that much about boxing. But you got to talk about it is kind of recent, but you got to talk about Ronda Rousey, and who is the most dominant female UFC fighter in some elite that did not even exist, that was started in the past 20 years. And she is.
I'll put Ronda Rousey on my last 1 year. I'll definitely give her that, and I'll give her
but
my
last, for the
last
20
years.
I mean, there was no women's UFC in the last 20 years.
True,
so
so I guess if you had to include someone from each section of sports, each category.
Yeah, we're going to have boxing on here.
Even though she's the most dominant woman yes. UFC fighter, does that really make her pass 21 other athletes, yes. 20 other athletes?
14 seconds against Kat Zingano. That's all I got to say. Well, we were watching Dave and Buster's, and that was unbelievable.
I'm still mad I missed that fight. Never use the bathroom during a Ronda Rousey fight because you'll miss the whole thing. I don't want to sound like a homer here again, and I guess we could say we're not because we took Derek Jeter out. How's Mariano Rivera not on the top 20?
Yeah, no, it's got to be. I can't believe they left him out. The greatest closer
of all time.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Whose career spanned that whole...
I don't like hearing the Trevor Hoffman arguments, and I think it's embarrassing that the National League named their best closer award after him. Just name it all after Mariano.
Yeah, no, there was no one better at the closing position than Mariano Rivera. They defined it as, you know, a position.
But like you were saying earlier, a lot of it is polarizing. They wanted to put some names that people would talk about. That's why you have Jordan, LeBron, Tiger in the top. So moving on, Tiger Woods. The big reports were that they spotted his private plane down in Augusta, so all the speculation comes out. He hasn't yet signed up to be in the Masters, and he doesn't have to commit until Monday, I believe, Monday the 6th. But since he's a previous Masters winner, he's not holding a spot. He's not screwing someone over. He gets in whenever he wants to. What do you think? Him playing in the Masters, is it more important for the game of golf itself and for getting the other fans, or is this more important for Tiger that he play in the Masters?
I think it's 100% more important for Tiger. I mean, the game of golf, what he's done for the game of golf is amazing, and people now watch golf because of Tiger Woods, but it's kind of taken on a life of its own now without him. You have someone like Rory McIlroy, who is the new face of golf, and you know he's on all of the magazines and everything now. So this is much more important for Tiger. If he's going to reestablish himself as the best in the game, he's got to start now. He's got to win this Masters this coming weekend. So.
I mean, that's the thing with Tiger is I know he doesn't care about the regular tournament plays, non-majors. The guy has enough career victories. He does not need to compete in all those tournaments. No. He's done enough for the game, but if he has any chance of chasing that Jack Nicklaus's major tournament record, he's got to start playing in these, and the Masters is Tiger's game.
Yeah.
In the last 10 years since he won his last one, he's only finished outside of the top 10 twice, and once was last year when he didn't even play.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is his tournament he has to get in if he has any chance of chasing him down.
Yeah, no, I mean, he has not lost any of his skills, I don't believe. I mean, it's a lot has to do with injury.
With
it is mental, but I think it's physical also with Tiger because a lot of his game early on relied on his physical prowess and how powerful his swing was and how strong he was, you know, as an athlete. He really was an athlete. You look at guys who play golf like John Daly and all these guys, you don't really think of golfers as athletes, and Tiger Woods made that a thing. Like, Tiger Woods was in peak physical condition when he was younger, and he could, you know, his club head moved like 120 miles an hour before he hit the ball, and that his game when he was younger was based a lot on that, and now he's had to make a lot of changes that his body's starting to fail him, and he's got to be able to, it's all technique now. Yeah, it happens to everybody. If he's going to continue his game, he has to look back now and say, okay, maybe my technique was not as good back when I was, you know, a youngin' and I was just ripping the ball, you know, down the fairway. I got to look back. And that's why he's changed his swing so much, because he's trying to find the technique that's going to give him the accuracy and give him the power that doesn't take such a hard toll on his body because he can't hold up anymore.
To use like a different sports reference here, you see that with pitchers in the major leagues.
Yeah.
A guy who used to throw the 99-mile-an-hour fastball, as he gets older, he has to start relying more on off-speed pitches.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
That's kind of what Tiger's doing here. He definitely had to change his swing up. But the thing that always made Tiger was his putting.
Yeah.
And the last couple tournaments he's been in, he does not make those Tiger putts. You don't have Tiger vision anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think it's all going to come down to if he could still putt for the dough, that's what's going to like solidify himself here.
Yeah.
And,
that's a mental thing, too. He's a little rattled for a while there. He had a couple, you know, a tough stretch.
And he's come back from being rattled. After the whole 2009 incident, like, and all the stuff really started coming out with Tiger, he fell apart. But then that following year, he came back, and he was ranked number one. He competed, finished fourth in that year's Masters.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's just in 2010. It's only a few years ago that he was finishing that high. So I do think it's more important for him to really jump back into the game, because you're right, golf is doing okay right now. It's not what it used to be, and they might not be getting the casual fan.
Mm-hmm.
But you have Rory McIlroy this year. He has a chance to already complete a Grand Slam this young. He'll have won each of the majors at least once if he wins the Masters. That's where he made his name in 2011, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
He came out, he led in the Masters. He was the leader all 3 days and then had that huge collapse.
Yeah.
And everyone's, oh, this kid, he's not ready. But then he ends up winning four other majors.
Yeah.
I think another thing, you still have Phil Mickelson in the Masters, and Phil's going to draw a crowd. Yeah, he was the closest thing to Tiger.
He was,
during
yeah.
Tiger's time. That was his competition, and people liked Phil because Phil reminds them of like Tin Cup in the movie. He'd take like 900 bad shots throughout the game, but that one would end up winning him a tournament.
No, he was good. Yeah, he has not been as good recently, but he definitely pushed Tiger for a while there. He's also fun to watch.
I like that kid Jordan Spieth too, the young kid. So
Ricky Fowler is another one who's pretty interesting.
I mean, there's a lot of young talent.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The game has changed, and golf doesn't need Tiger anymore. It has a lot of young stars that people are into, and it's become cool.
And Rory McIlroy, first guy to be on a golf EA Sports video game since Tiger Woods. So, I mean, they're already trying to really change the whole mainstream.
Because golf was like, oh, crap. Like, we need to figure this out before, you know, because Tiger's not going to be around forever. It was a huge wake-up call for the game when everyone was like, you know, Tiger's not there. What am I going to do? Now they've really put a lot of effort into building up guys like Rory and, you know, showing the personalities of a lot of the other guys that play the game, like Ricky Fowler, like, you know, who am I thinking of? Bubba Watson.
Bubba Watson. Yeah. I mean, he's won two of the last three Masters.
Yeah.
How's that not exciting to then go watch this guy go maybe three or four?
Yeah.
And he's a fun guy to watch too. He's an average guy. It seems like he gives off that whole you could go have a beer with Bubba Watson and have a good time.
And the game of golf loves those kind of personalities, and they love to put those in the forefront so people are really interested in it. So.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be coming back to talk Kentucky basketball and if they could go undefeated this season. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Fast Track with John and Zach.
All right, and we're back, and you're still listening to The Fast Track with John and Zach. Make sure you check us out on Twitter at FT Sports Talk. And, you know, shoot us some tweets. Let us know what you're thinking of the show. If you have any questions, we'll answer them on our next podcast.
Do it.
All right. So we're moving back. We talked about that top 20 list, and that brought us to Kentucky basketball. And if they could have a chance, and they're 36-0 right now with two more games to play, moving into the Final Four. They got a game up against Wisconsin. And then they'll play, if they win that game, they'll play the winner of the Duke-Michigan State game.
Hopefully Duke.
That's what I have in my bracket. I have Kentucky and Duke, and I believe you do as well.
Yes, sir.
Well, the big question that people have been posing is if Kentucky does go undefeated, they run the tables, will they go down as one of the best college teams of all time? And Chris Webber came out and said no, he didn't believe so, and that stirred up all sorts of controversy and people freaking out saying he's disrespecting the Big Blue and other people. Yeah, Kentucky's underrated, overrated, it doesn't matter. What do you think? If they end up running the table, are they one of the best teams?
100%, yeah. I think Chris Webber doesn't know what he's talking about. Like, you obviously, if you play in, you know, the NCAA and you do not lose to a single team, and it's not like they haven't played anybody. You know, they have played the best teams that they had to offer this year in college basketball, and they did not lose to a single one of them. You have to be in the conversation for one of the best teams of all time. You have to. That immediately enters you into that conversation.
All right, I don't disagree with anything you just said. I'm sure that they have to be in the conversation. You're right.
Yeah.
They have to be in the conversation.
You have to.
But there's been seven other undefeated teams that have run the table and won the NCAA tournament. And then you could even throw in one more before the NCAA tournament was what it is. The NIT was even more prestigious. And there was an undefeated team. I think it was the LIU Birds, the Blackbirds. They ended up winning the NIT tournament, and they went undefeated. So, obviously, all those teams would be in the conversation, but I don't see Kentucky's team, this team full of underclassmen and freshmen and sophomores, I don't think they'd be able to play on the same court as some of those other undefeated teams who are chock full of juniors, seniors, just all upperclassmen. I know you can't blame Kentucky for that. It's they're playing in what the league is now. You're one and done, two and done. You don't stay all 4 years. So they don't have that opportunity. But do you really think Karl Anthony Towns would have been able to D up Christian Laettner at that time when he was a senior? He was a grown man. And I don't see how these 19-year-old kids would have been competing the same way against them.
So let's give Kentucky the time. Let's say that none of them, if for some strange reason, do not go to the NBA and they stay for the full 4 years at Kentucky. They would be undefeated. They would be the best team.
You don't know that, though.
Well, I mean, you don't know that they would not be on the same court then as the other teams. Like, you just can't qualify that. There's no way to say they would be able to play as well as these teams.
There's no way to qualify that they would be able to beat those guys. But, I mean, it is something serious you could look at. the grown men, the Christian Leitners, the Scott Mays, all those seniors who were playing all 4 years or 3 years, whatever it was, their body types were so different than these kids. And it's the same way people are saying this Kentucky team would be able to beat some of the lower-seeded teams in the Eastern Conference, the pros. It's a major step, a huge difference. They're boys. These guys are boys, and you're talking about them trying to cover men?
I mean, you're talking about, but, like, they were guys playing the NBA 18, 19 years old. Like, you know, LeBron coming out of high school dominated. Like, it doesn't matter as much anymore. There's not that big a difference between...
I don't think any of these guys, though, on the Kentucky team are LeBron.
I'm not like, saying I'm, they're LeBron, saying but I'm
that,
saying...
But these guys aren't the guys who would have gone right out of high school. Into
all I'm hearing is that every single guy on that team is NBA ready right now. And, like, that you have to account, like take that into account. I mean, they are a very, very good basketball team.
And I'm not disagreeing that they're not a good basketball team. I'm not saying that. It's just when you talk about some of those other undefeated teams, I just think they easily take the cake over Kentucky. Maybe Kentucky's top five best college teams of all time, but you go back to the 72 and 73 undefeated Bruins. They ran the table, undefeated, won the tournament, won a national championship two consecutive years in a row with the same group of guys. When they were juniors, they lost what there was four juniors and one senior in the starting lineup. The following year, they add one more senior to the starting lineup, a starting lineup of five seniors. 60 consecutive games they won. So I don't see how Kentucky could be better than that team alone.
Well, you're never going to know. I mean, Kentucky might as well, they could have, if they all chose to stay, win for the next 4 years and be undefeated for 4 years in a row. That could, it's very possible that could happen. Like, you never know. So just, you can't compare it and say that, okay, these, you know, the UCLA team from way back in the day, you know, won all the consecutive games. They were great. That makes them better because you're never going to know if Kentucky would win two seasons in a row undefeated. Like, it's very possible they could.
Right. Like you're saying, you never could know. That's why we're just speculating here.
Yeah, obviously. No, I understand. But like,
and everyone listening knows we're speculating, obviously. These are just our opinions. But if the Kentucky team, we're already saying they're going to go down as one of the greatest, and they still do have these two games to play, what if they lose to Wisconsin in the next round?
Then
are they
not
still in that conversation?
No. Immediately they're out. It's like saying, you know, the Patriots, when they lost the Giants in 07, like they were in the conversation for one of the best teams of all time, but then as soon as they lost the Super Bowl, they're out of it. I mean, I just think that's how you gauge it.
So could only an undefeated team be one of the greatest of all time? Or what if you suffered an early loss in the season and then you ran the table and you won the national champ? Is it just you have to win a national championship to be considered one of the greatest teams? Or is it more you have to go undefeated and win one?
I think you 100% have to win a national championship to be considered one of the greatest teams. Otherwise, you're not the greatest team.
Yeah,
if you don't win the national championship. Undefeated is a little bit, now that I'm thinking about it, it's a little bit iffy. I don't know. I imagine it helps to be undefeated. I would not rank a team that has losses and also won a national championship above a team that was undefeated and also won the national championship.
It's just the main team I'm thinking of is the Georgetown team that ended up losing to Villanova. It was led by Patrick Ewing that second year. That was 1985 or something like that. But they ended up losing in that final game. They didn't win the national championship, and everyone was looking at that team the same way we're looking at Kentucky, like, oh, man, this is what team that is the greatest team to ever play. Now we don't talk about them as much, but I still, even if Kentucky went undefeated, I think you could put that 85 team in the conversation. You could put the Duke championship team with Bobby Hurley, Grant Hill, Christian Leitner. It's if these guys, if people stay, if a couple kids do stay, and there's still a couple guys who haven't declared yet.
I don't think they're going to stay.
I mean, I wouldn't, especially in today's day. And that's why I don't blame these kids for leaving after one. That's what the college basketball landscape has become. One and done, you're out of there. So we won't ever know if
But I mean, I think you have to, like, it does matter going undefeated because it makes you a better team in that you were able to stay focused and, you know, not let there be any trap games or anything like that for an entire year. Like that, like the Georgetown team, because they lost the game and they couldn't put away a team that they were supposed to put away at the end of it, it makes them not as good a team as they could have been. And so if they had won that game, they would be in the conversation for sure. But a Kentucky that wins every game this year was able to, you know, stay mentally sharp and stay, you know, on top of their game. They've had a couple close ones. You know, the game against Notre Dame could just as easily have gone the other way, you know.
I mean, you did see what that team was made of in those last few minutes, and I will give Kentucky a ton of credit for that.
Yeah.
That defense, they owned Notre Dame in those last 2 minutes. I really thought Notre Dame had them locked up, and you saw them kind of switch. Hey, wait a second.
This isn't the last game.
We need to keep playing.
No, it makes you a lot better if you can say, you know, we need to win all these games, and we have the mental fortitude to kind of stay focus it and make that happen.
Okay, so we're saying Kentucky, we're in a bracket together, so I know we both have them beating Duke in the finals.
Yeah.
Now that our brackets are done, though, you changing your picks at all? Are you putting anyone else? You think Michigan State over Duke?
No.
You think Wisconsin over Kentucky?
I hate Wisconsin so much, John. I really do.
I don't understand your beef with Frank Kaminsky.
I just think I want to hang out with
Frank Kaminsky.
No, I would never. That would be the worst. I'm so angry with Wisconsin for winning that game.
He just seems like a cooler version of Andrea Bargnani. Like both 7 footers who shoot threes. Yeah,
It's mostly because I had them not in the Final Four, obviously. I had them losing to Arizona, I had them losing to a couple other teams in other different brackets, but I did not have them in the Final Four. I did not think they were that good of a team. But they proved me wrong. So way to go, Wisconsin, whatever. I still hate you. Michigan State also upsets me deeply.
The next question I was going to really ask you is what team upset you the most in your bracket? Who screwed you over?
I had a perfect Elite Eight, John, and then Michigan State and Wisconsin had to go and screw
and
my
I,
Final
I had
Four
seven of the eight, and then I had my four. I had still had the possibility of getting all of my Final Four correct, and Michigan State, of course, beating Louisville in overtime.
Louisville should have won that game. He had it right there, the tip in at the end of the game. They would have won. They would have to go into overtime. I knew as soon as they went into overtime, Louisville was not going to win that game.
I got to say, this was a great Elite Eight that we got to see. It was a great tournament in general. We still obviously have three more games left to be played, but the coaches that were in that Elite Eight, you had Patino going up against Tom Izzo, and now you're going to have Tom Izzo going up against Coach K, obviously.
Yeah. Legends.
You got Calipari and Bo Ryan going against each other, so it is going to be exciting. But
is stupid, though.
What I'm upset about is in that bracket we're in together, I made the mistake of picking a real low-scoring final game. That was the tiebreaker, and me and our one producer here, we're going against each other. And I claimed the final score would be a combined 112, and he claimed 130, 135. And so, obviously, if the combined score is 123 or lower, I'll grab it, and 123 or higher. I really wish I had changed that, though.
Dude, I mean, it's a good call for you that Kentucky is a great defensive team. I mean, it could be a pretty low-scoring game.
And that's what I was banking on is Kentucky, obviously, a big defense, and they have those trees clogging the paint up. I did not expect, and I'll give them a whole lot of credit, Justice Winslow on Duke has just turned himself into a great first-round draft pick.
Yeah.
I did not see him playing like this before the tournament.
No, he definitely turned it on.
So I was expecting Okafor to be going up against the trees in the final, Willie Cauley-Stein, Karl-Anthony Towns, Dakari Johnson, and them shutting Okafor down, and that'd be all Duke had.
Yeah.
Yeah, Justice Winslow is going to make sure I don't win this money, and I know it.
I don't know. It could be really interesting. I mean, I think Kentucky's going to have a pretty easy time playing defense against Duke. They're a great offensive team, but they're just so much bigger at the guard, and everything to the guard position. So it's going to be interesting. I think it could be low scoring. You do have a shot. I do hope Roque wins, though, to be honest.
This is when I replace you on this show and we call in. I'd replace you with Roque, and I don't want him either. So before we move on, though, final call, you going Kentucky to win it all?
Kentucky to win it all. It's going to be over 130-point final, though, to combined. Kentucky over Duke.
Unfortunately,
Wisconsin doesn't. Wisconsin gets is the first shutout in college basketball history.
I'm still telling you, I do not understand this Kaminsky beef, but
neither do I. But it's
I
deep.
Guess I never will.
All right, we'll be back talking baseball in just 10 seconds. Hey guys, thanks for checking out the Fast Track with John and Zach. Make sure you tell your friends to download our podcast on iTunes. Check us out at FT Sports Talk or shoot us an email at thefasttracksports@gmail.com.
And you're still listening to the Fast Track with John and Zach. We're going to change gears a little bit here and start talking MLB with opening day right around the corner, coming up April 5th. Before the season even starts, obviously it was an exciting spring training, some big off-season moves in free agency. You have early predictions on who's going to win the divisions and move on, or too soon to say?
It is a little soon. I mean, you got to take spring training with a grain of salt. I mean, a lot of this stuff is trying guys out. They don't take it as seriously as, I mean, I've seen some pretty great plays. A lot of guys do play pretty hard in the spring, and it's good to get the kinks out and everything. But you can't put too much stock in how people play in the spring. It's just not fair. I mean, you got a lot of games ahead of you in the regular season.
Exactly.
So
a
lot of things can change.
In sports.
I mean, it's unbelievable. And I don't know. I, I think the Nationals are going to be just as good as people say they are. I think their starting rotation is out of this world.
Unbelievable.
And I think
that Scherzer signing was huge.
Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, I can't believe that it was even allowed. Like that should be illegal.
See that one coming. All the names that were being thrown out of the teams he might sign with, as a Yankee fan, of course, that's all people were shoving down your throat is the Yankees speculation on Scherzer.
No one wants to play the Yankees anymore.
I'm kind of glad we didn't get Scherzer, to be honest.
Yeah.
But that's for a different time. The Nationals, I agree with you on the Nationals. That team is unbelievable. I went to school in Virginia, so I dealt with a lot of Nationals fans.
Mm.
The Bryce Harper hype is going to be through the roof if this team continues to play the way they did last year.
Steven Strasburg's kind of fallen off a little bit, huh? He's pretty good, so he's one of the better pitchers in the league, but he was supposed to be the,
Yeah, I think that's what happens with some of these young guys. We saw that with Jabba Chamberlain,
I don't want to even speak about that, John. That was too sad.
So much publicity so early on that only a few guys can handle that kind of pressure. So it's
what killed Jabba Chamberlain was that game against the Twins where all those the midge flies. Yeah,
yeah,
like that literally broke him, his spirit, and
he was never the same.
No,
and we tried to convert him into a starter, and I was never.
Yeah, that he was a victim of the Yankees kind of needing to fill a hole and trying to. Which was weird because they'd been so careful with him before that, with the Jabba rules and everything, and then they were suddenly like, and then they kind
of
gave up on him.
All the restrictions they gave Torrey on dealing with Jabba, they went out the window and showed Jabba's game. But, sticking with the Yankees in the American League East, my pick would be the Orioles. It's funny that the teams in the American League, you used to talk big time, Yankees, Red Sox, that was the only relevance, but now you got the Orioles, the Rays, and the Blue Jays all competing. Every single team in our division, I feel like, could be a playoff.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Orioles have it pretty much locked up. I think the Yankees and the Red Sox are a couple years away from being dominant again.
You don't think the Yankees have a chance at the wild card this year? Are you losing faith?
I'm not losing faith. I mean, I think that they always have – the Yankees always have a shot to make the playoffs. It depends on how well the guys they have. Obviously, it depends how well they play. I mean, that was stupid. But they always have a shot to make the playoffs. I don't think they have what it takes this year. I think they're stepping in the right direction. I mean, not having big free agent signings is kind of a boon for us because this coming season is going to be more of a team mentality. I think the Yankees are starting to shift towards not just, we're going to have 2-3 guys that are just huge names that are going to carry this team. With Derek Jeter moving on, that's the last of that era of, superstardom in New York. A lot of the guys, that play now are kind of the tail end of their superstardom, like a Teixeira or something like that. But the guys you hear about are Brett Gardner, who's, not like a standout like, Robbie Cano or anything like that. He's a great team small ball player, and like the Yankees are starting to trend towards that, so is the league overall. I think that's going to help them in the long run. Like you look at a team like Kansas City last year, they don't have a lot of huge name guys. They're a lot of good, solid, consistent guys with a lot of great team chemistry who play together, play for each other, and they play kind of more small ball and they team oriented baseball, and they dominate it. So
and you're right, that is the way the landscape of the league has been shifting. You don't go out and sign huge names, and there are teams who will do that. The Red Sox obviously made a couple big splashes this year when they go and get Sandoval and Hanley Ramirez. But I did enjoy the change in the Yankees culture here, not going out and overspending on a guy who might be at the tail end of his career like we seem to do every year.
Yeah, I mean, I've been calling for that for years. Not to say that I'm really awesome, but I am really awesome. And like I've been saying, the Yankees should be doing this thing. You're not going to laugh at all at that. I'm not. I've been saying for years that the Yankees should focus more on building young talent, building the farm system, kind of, building in-house in order to take a couple years off from, quotes, being a playoff contender, build a little bit. Build, like, the team that came up with Jeter, as a youngin' was all homegrown guys that they started with to begin with, and they grew as a team, and they won a bunch of World Series, and the Yankees got to start that again, and that's, I think they're starting to do that now, which makes me happy.
I'm actually excited to see the Yankees' rotation this year, and that's what I think the whole linchpin of our success will be, is, you have Tanaka coming back from his injury. We're going to see. He was a potential Rookie of the Year candidate last year before he goes down, and probably the favorite before he went down the way he was pitching, but you still have Tanaka in your rotation. You got an older CeCe, who struggled the last 2 years.
You also have Pineda
coming back, and I still applaud the audacity of Pineda with the pine tar incident. But, I mean, him as your number 3 starter at least. Losing Kuroda obviously hurts. But
yeah.
Then you throw in Nova coming back. You have Adam Warren was just named the 5th starter. It's a solid rotation. It's just you have to stay healthy, and that's going to be the Yankees' problem in their rotation is are we going to be able to stay healthy the whole year?
Yeah, they've had issues with that. You got to stay healthy. You got to stay consistent. And that's always been their problem. They have these guys – that, you know, look really good on paper, and they come in, they don't have the season, they don't live up to what they're supposed to be. But I think if there are, you know, rotation stays healthy, like you said, and they pitch well, you get, you know, maybe 20 games, a little over 20 games from your top three guys is good. We'll be okay. I think CC is primed to have a big year this year. I think he's going to have a breakout season. I think he's, you know, never going to be the CC was of old.
The
but
Brewer
I think
CC that yeah. is pitching on short rest and yeah. just dominating.
But I think he's primed to have a breakout year this year. So he's definitely somebody to watch.
I guess one of the other main people to watch, and it's your very polarizing figure here, is he excited for the return? Alex Rodriguez, you ready to see what he could do after
yes.
the spring?
I'm actually really happy to see A-Rod back. I mean, I don't condone what he did. I mean, taking, you know, steroids was obviously wrong. And I've always kind of felt A-Rod is more of a victim in all this stuff, which I don't know, everyone probably disagrees with me here. Right. But I think he had a lot of pressure coming up, as, you know, heralded as a young guy, the best player ever in baseball history, you know, as it went very young, you know, whenever he's on the Mariners, they were saying he is going to be the greatest player in the history of baseball, and his body started to fail him, and, you know, his pressure started getting to him, I think, and he turned to something that was very prevalent at the time in the league, and that was performance enhancing drugs.
Interesting to see the way we use him here. The main stories are that he's going to be a part-time DH. They've tried moving him over to first base because, obviously, after these hip surgeries, his lateral movement's not the greatest. But he had a great spring. Yeah. And like we said, spring training doesn't always – you can't put too much stock and weight in that. But the guy was still hitting home runs. It's going to be, can he get his bat around on some fastballs and some of the high-quality pitchers. But I still – if he could give us 15 to 20 home runs, hit 250, drive in 40 RBIs – I think that's more than we actually expect from him or need from him.
Yeah.
Yeah. If he could give us Chase Headley-esque numbers, mm-hmm. I think that's a good enough resurgence for an Alex Rodriguez who's missed almost in the last 2 years. He's played like 40 games of baseball at
yeah.
most. So it is going to be interesting to see what happens with Alex Rodriguez and what happens with the Yankee season. Same for the Mets. I mean, there's a lot of hype on the Mets this year. The return of Matt Harvey, which is going to be exciting. What do you take out of that whole – Matt Harvey's not getting a start until the third game of the season.
First of all, I'm such like a closet Mets fan. It's crazy. Like, I've secretly just really root for them to do well because they're just so bad all the time. And like, I really would love to see, you know, Mets fans be happy for once and see that team succeed. It'll be a lot of fun. But I think that's a really interesting decision to have Matt Harvey, you know, with the third game start there. He was so dominant. I know he's missed a lot of time, you know, so that might factor in a little bit how he's coming off of, you know, Tommy John, stuff like that. So, but I think that is more of a, the Mets are just flat broke and they need to start selling some tickets.
And that's kind of sad. That's the way I take it too. Sure. We clearly don't know as much as the Mets organization, and there's some things
that's debatable.
Well, true with some of the decisions they've made in the past, but you're going to start DeGrom, which I have no problem with. That's rookie of the year. You have him doing the opener at Washington against the Nationals at their home stadium. Then you have Bartolo Colon's going to be pitching the Mets opener. And to me, the only logical reasoning for that is they knew they'd draw on opening day no matter what. It's your home opener. How do you get people to come to the second game of the season, which doesn't have the grand entrances and the ceremonies before? And I guess the best way to do that is to throw your superstar pitcher, Matt Harvey, out there, let people come see him. But to me, it's a little embarrassing almost that's they're making decisions based off of, in my mind, monetary concerns and selling out crowds. Shouldn't you be pitching the guy who has the best chance to give you a win, throwing your number one or your number two against their number one or number two?
I mean, if for baseball, no. I don't think this early in the season it really matters who pitches the second or third game. I think a lot of things are going to change, obviously, throughout the season. I think there are so many games that if you have Harvey go day three instead of day two, it's not going to make that big a difference in your win-loss. You know, I don't think you have to worry about best first best, you know, second best first second best until you get down to the playoffs, you know, later in the season, postseason stuff. But it is a little disturbing to see a lot of the business decisions being made, like you're talking about the Cubs as well, you know, making that decision there. I sending that guy down to the minors.
Chris Bryant, you're referring
yeah,
to,
yeah, Chris
right?
Bryant, yes. I knew I was testing you to see if you knew. But yeah,
I got
like
my trivia down.
Yeah, so like, you know, you see decisions like this being made all across the league, and it's definitely there's definitely warranted. I think in some cases these are business decisions and these are businesses. These are, you know, these teams ultimately are businesses and they have to make money and they have to keep the best players they can for as long as they can. But it takes a little bit away from the game, you know, from looking at it from an outside perspective. And it's the purity of the game is kind of gone when you see things like that, you know, happening.
It's with the whole Chris Bryant thing, though. I don't understand theirs as much as the Mets. Just that's a team that just shelled out a ton of money to bring in Joe Maddon. You just shelled out a ton of money. You got John Lester. You're trying to make this push. Forget the curse of the goat. It is the year of the goat, so they're trying to really lead this team to the promised land. But Chris Bryant had the best spring of any veteran, of any prospect. So it's just it's concerning to see them sending him already down to the minors just for a better contract situation in the future.
I mean, you said it, though, dude. They just shelled out a bunch of money for guys this year, and they don't want to have to do that again in the future. So if they can, you know, kind of finagle the system and work it out so they don't have to, you know, pay Chris Bryant a whole bunch of money, rather they could kick that can down the road, that's better off for them in the long run monetarily. But, you know, you're right. It is, you know.
This might just be being a little cynical here as well, but part of me hopes, and I don't wish injuries on any player in the league. Obviously, I don't wish that, but I kind of hope one of their guys goes down after game one, one of their outfielders, and they have to call Chris Bryant up, play outfield, and just eat that whole story. Like, oh, you wanted to send him down, and now he's already back for game two. I just kind of want to see them get stuck because this whole hype on the Cubs, I know you brought in a lot of talent, and you're really trying to revamp this team, and Theo Epstein is doing a great job with that, but enough is enough. I'm already seeing the Cubs World Series commercials and stuff like that on ESPN, and it's a little annoying to say, hey, this is a team that hasn't won in forever, and hey, we're back. Don't worry, Cubs fans. And yeah, I guess as a Cubs fan, you need something to root for.
You got to hang around to them. I mean, the only thing worse than being a Cubs fan is being a Mets fan. So it's really, you know, tough to – you got to have something, sort of bright spot in your life there. No, I hope they win. I think Chicago's a great city. I love that place. I hope the Cubs do well. I think it's their time. They deserve it. I hope they don't get too ahead of themselves. They got to win it first. I mean, as a team in the AL East, we know full well how much what it means. You can bring in as much talent as money could buy and still have the worst season ever.
All right, and we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back to talk some more sports and give you the Should I Care or Hell Nah segment. All right, we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Fast Track with John and Zach.
You're back listening to The Fast Track with John and Zach. Time for my favorite segment, a little bit of a rebrand for a second episode here now. Should I Care? It was becoming Hell Yeah or Hell Nah.
Hell Nah.
All right, don't do that ever again.
Yeah, that was a mistake. So we're going to change that.
We are not going to have that. That's not okay.
We're just going to get right into this here.
They may have said that, but they were dead wrong. So we'll know for the future. So write that down, guys. We're not doing that anymore.
All right, and you're fired.
All right, we're going to dive in now. So first thing I got for you, John, Hell Yeah or Hell Nah, Phillies are going to sell a 9-patty, 2,200-calorie burger at the stadium this year.
Hell yeah. I need to get to Citizen Banks Park and try that burger. The only thing I don't understand is if it's 9 patties, they make no reference to the 9 innings. They just wanted to make a triple 3-patty burger.
You don't think that they were motivated by 9 innings of baseball to make a 9-patty burger?
I mean, I'd at least reference it in the name. It's called the Way Back Triple Burger.
I'm scared that you know that.
I've already done my research, and I know all about that 139 grams of fat that those Philly fans will be consuming.
I don't care how many Philly fans get diabetes from this. It doesn't affect me.
It's better than them watching their games. So. next thing for you, Indiana law allowing businesses the discrimination rules. The language just got changed.
Yes, I mean, I would say, hell yes, you should care to begin with. I mean, it's not so much that it allows for discrimination. It's the wording of it kind of made it easier for businesses to claim on the grounds of religious freedom that they didn't have to serve and to make the certain types of people, you know, if they did not mesh with their religious beliefs, it would make it a lot easier for them to take these kind of things to court. And Indiana was claiming that, you know, this is very similar to, or is the exact same thing as the law we have in the books, the federal level, and a couple other states have, which was not true. But as you said, a lot of that's being walked back now. You know, there's the governor was like, oh man, like this is obviously not go over well at all.
And I think the publicity of the NCAA tournament being played there had a lot to do. Now it was getting covered by not just news stories and stuff like that. Now you had the whole sports world getting involved in there too.
Yeah, I mean, but I think overall, like, it's an issue that the majority of people have a very strong opinion of it, and they are against discrimination, especially on this kind of level, and that they organize, you know, well. Everyone seems to organize well around this, and kind of nip this in the bud before it got started, because a lot of people behind this law were kind of, you know, religious zealots who were. Had, you know, came out in very strong stances against homosexuality and things like that. And so I'm glad it's being walked back. To be honest, though, I don't think that the NCAA playing their, you know, tournament in Indiana had anything to do with this, though. Like, I don't – there's no way they were going to move it. Like, you know, people were like, they shouldn't allow these games to happen. Like, it's impossible to, after the months and months of planning to set this up, that they're going to say, like, oh, let's go to the gym, you know,
exactly.
One state
you
over.
You can't just move the tournament.
Yeah,
quickly,
and it's not
so
like they're endorsing,
absurd.
You know, discrimination then as the NCAA. They're just, they got to play this tournament here. It has nothing to do with, you know, federal or state laws on the books. Like, you know, but whatever. So I guess you should care about this, but I'm glad everyone did care enough to have this changed.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. I'm going to ask you, John, hell yeah or hell nah, UConn women advancing to the Final Four again this year. Unbelievable run.
Hell yeah. And these girls do not get enough credit here. This is 8 consecutive Final Four appearances.
It's unbelievable they've done at UConn.
I mean, from 2008 on, you're talking about, we were talking dynasties and some of the greatest college programs. I mean, we should be including these girls here because that revolving door has been working out just fine for them. So
oh, yeah.
I definitely care about this, and I'm looking forward to seeing UConn play next year as well.
Yeah, I totally care. I mean, you look at that WNBA and you see it's just literally UConn rosters all over the place, like Maya Moore, you know, Deanna Taurasi, some of the greatest players. Gina Auriemma is one of the greatest coaches to ever coach women's basketball. And they've done a really great thing, and, you know, people should definitely care about that. So hell yeah for me on that one too.
All right, moving on. U.S. men's soccer has played a couple friendlies later. Should we care that they've blown a lead in the last two and ended up losing the games both times?
Hell no, John. I do not care about U.S. men's soccer friendlies that are happening now. To be honest, I like U.S. women's soccer a whole lot more than U.S. men's. I think that is way more fun to watch. I enjoyed that World Cup oodles more than I did when they lost to Japan. Oodles more than I did this previous World Cup. I mean, it's just more exciting because I maybe because we're way better at women's soccer than we are at men's soccer. Yeah, it was kind of exciting to watch the men. You know, they did pretty well this past World Cup. But I don't care what they do in friendlies. You got like 27 years till the next World Cup, so before I care about it again. So I mean, that's a hell nah for me totally.
I mean, it's a hell nah for me. Just because, like we said, they're friendlies. That's like getting me all worked up about a preseason game, essentially. It's not going in the record books. I don't care. The scorecards, it's not going there. But I did really enjoy. I am getting to be a little bit more of an MLS fan and a soccer fan in general after this last World Cup. I know the U.S. got a little crazy here seeing our team play a little bit better. And hopefully that continues and we'll be able to root for men's soccer in the next couple years to come.
I'm going to ask you, John. Hell yeah or hell nah, Justin Verlander to start this season on the DL.
Hell nah, we shouldn't care. Because even though Detroit might have lost some of their rotation there, I know they lost, who was that? They lost Rick Porcella and Max Scherzer, like we were talking about earlier. But you still got the likes of David Price. Yeah, Verlander's going to be on the DL, but you have Anibal Sanchez coming up too. Detroit, their offense is going to carry them like they have in the past, and this rotation will do just fine until Verlander gets back.
Agree. It's a long season, and we'll see what he can do when he, you know, gets back around to it.
All right, for you, you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Are you taking Jameis Winston first overall? Should we care about that?
Hell yeah, you should care about that. I think it's a very important choice for the Buccaneers. I would take Jameis Winston for sure. I think that's a pretty solid bet. I think Mariota is not going to translate as well. He's going to need a couple years of work, and the Buccaneers, someone's going to work out right away. And even though Jameis has had his off-the-field issues, the only thing I've heard about him is his high football IQ, and his, you know, athleticism is unquestioned. So he's a much better first-year starter than Marcus Mariota would be, and I think the Buccaneers need someone like that right now. They need an exciting player who's going to, you know, bring some attention to that team.
Hell yeah, we should care. Just because the Bucs definitely do need a quarterback, and they've kind of thrown all their weight into getting Jameis Winston. We all know that's the big talk, and they said he had one of the best pro days they've ever seen. All they did was rave while other people were skeptical. But if it was any other team who didn't need a quarterback or needed a quarterback but could get by without drafting one this year, I'd pass on him and I'd fix other needs just because to put your franchise and say this is the number one overall selection. We're going to put it in Jameis Winston's hands. Some character flaws there for sure, especially on the things we know to be true, whether it's the crab legs, dumb college moves.
Yeah.
Is that really what you want the face of your franchise doing? So, hell yeah, hell nah.
Yeah. Back to some college football now. Alabama running back released recently on a marijuana charge. Sean, your thoughts?
Hell yeah, we should care, because this is the third Alabama player released from the team in the last 4 days due to disciplinary problems. And, I mean, it is different, but what are they, the Miami Hurricanes now? We have to worry about Alabama becoming
one of those
teams.
It's all about the U.
So, yeah, we should care, because it seems to be a pattern right now. We're going to find out more with Taylor and the rest of what's going on, but I care for right now.
I think you should care, too. I mean, I think there's a huge problem overall, the NCAA, you know, with college sports in general, high school sports in general, that has to be fixed, and this is just, you know, a very small cog in the wheel. It's indicative of a much larger issue that has to be looked at. So I think, hell yeah, you should care about this, and some more people should start caring and start looking at this very seriously, shining some light on this kind of stuff.
All right, for you, Durant says he does not want to leave Oklahoma City, and he would like to play his entire career for the same team. Should we care about that right now?
Hell no. I would not care about that statement being made right now. What else is he going to say? He's been very happy in OKC. They've treated him well. People love him in OKC. He loves OKC. There's no reason for him to leave. You know, I think it's just something you say as a player. Like, he's not going to come out and say, like, you know, let me get out of here. Like, you know, I hate this place. Everybody sucks. He's not going to say that. You know, he's going to – when the time comes, he's going to test the market for sure. He's going to want that payday. He's going to want to stay in OKC, but he's going to want to stay there for, you know, a decent amount of money. But I do like to see a player kind of stick with it. You don't see that very often, staying in one place. But
yeah, I mean, the last couple you could think of, really, just Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, and Dirk Nowitzki.
I just don't care about him saying that right now.
I don't care about him saying it right now, because he's not going to be a free agent until the 2016 offseason. So this isn't something we're going to be dealing with this year. He's not a free agent. A lot can change in a year.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens to them in the playoffs. We'll see what happens with Russell Westbrook. But ask me again if I care right before that free agency, and my answer might change.
Now, I know how you feel about this one, John, but I'm going to ask so we can get this going here. Phil Jackson recently makes a video statement asking Knicks season ticket holders to be patient.
Now, for me, it's a weird way to answer this, but hell yeah, we should care, because this is pathetic. This is absolutely devastating as a Knicks fan. I'm sick of hearing about the plan being in motion. I know we have to be patient. I'm okay with that. This season's over. We have a top draft pick coming up. We have a lot of money to spend in free agency. We'll have Carmelo Anthony back, a year older, obviously. But stop talking and just do the work. I don't need to hear about the behind-the-scenes stuff. We're supposed to be New York sports. We're supposed to be above these. Hey, by the way, just give us some time. We'll be relevant again. Hell yeah, we should care, because as Knicks fans, that is embarrassing.
Be patient, but keep paying us exorbitant amounts of money to buy tickets to come watch our games where we're doing terribly. Yeah, like, you know, wait a sec. Wait a couple years. We'll be better eventually.
I mean, it's the same story we've heard constantly, though. They say this every time the Knicks suffer. So, yes, I want to see what happens, but I don't care right now, except the fact that it's embarrassing. Chris Mullin just accepted the St. John's head coaching job. Should we be caring about this?
Hell yeah, I think you should care. I think he's, you know, this is rookie debut coaching-wise. St. John's was an historic program in the past. It has not been, you know, as good of late. The Red Storm, I'd like to see them return to that. My little cousin is a huge St. John's fan. So it would be good to kind of see what Chris Mullin can do here. I mean, he was a great player. He's obviously going to be, you know, I've heard only good things about him. You know, people are saying he's going to do a really good job as a head coach. So we'll see what he can do. But hell yeah, you should care.
I love these stories. Just a guy going back to his alma mater, and he's going to try out his head coaching debut here. The one thing I really want to see, though, is I was a big fan of the 30 for 30 Requiem for the Big East, which obviously talks about the St. John's program and what Big East was like then. But I hope he wears the Lou Carnesecca sweater as well, his head coach. I'd love to see them bring back that Bill Cosby-looking kind of sweater. So I'm very excited for this.
We'll have to tweet that out at him, see if he'll listen. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Chris Mullin is one of our followers, so we'll have
definitely
to send that to him.
Yeah, for sure. So your favorite guy, Tony Romo, John, yeah, says he would have totally have taken a pay cut for DeMarco Murray to stay around to be able to, you know, make him a better offer. Hell yeah or hell no, John?
Hell
care.
No. No way.
A hard no.
Should we be caring about Romo saying this? If he wanted to restructure his contract to make room for DeMarco Murray, then he should have done it. Or he should have brought it up then. Or maybe we don't know. Maybe he asked and they said no. But it's past. DeMarco Murray's gone. Why are you talking about this? You don't have him. You're not going to get him back. And if it is the fact that he offered and the Cowboys organization said, no, 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 we're ready to move on, then why is he throwing his team under the bus here and bringing this up? There's nothing he could do about it, and I think he needs to shut up. And that's a little personal attack on Tony Romo as a Giants fan. But, geez, I mean, just knock it off.
Yeah, no, I totally think we don't need to care about this. It's irrelevant.
Another guy that I personally have feelings about here, Dwayne Bowe says, just sit back and watch, and he's going to score more TDs this season and give Browns fans something to cheer about. Should we care?
Hell no. Dwayne Bowe, another thing that's completely irrelevant. Dwayne Bowe has never been an elite wide receiver in the league. He does not get to talk like one. He is not good. I mean, he will just catch more touchdowns next year than he did last year. Because
it's impossible not to.
It literally is impossible. He had zero touchdowns. He is not. And it wasn't, you know, because the rest of the Kansas City Chiefs were not a good team. He dropped more passes than I think I've ever seen a wide receiver, you know, that claims to be, you know, as good as Dwayne Bowe does. But he has been good for nothing else besides ruining my fantasy team year after year. So, hell no.
I agree with you there. Just do something, then talk about it. I don't need to hear you bragging right now. You're leaving a quarterback or a game manager, as some people would call Alex Smith. But
flawless hair to beard ratio on Alex Smith.
Oh, don't get me started. Yeah. That's what I model myself off of. But who's his quarterback here? I mean, he's saying he's going to catch more touchdown passes. You're leaving an established quarterback who's won playoff games to go to the Browns. Who's throwing you the ball that you could be bragging like this? So hell no, I don't care about that either.
Do you care that the Kings have signed the first NBA player of Indian descent in Sim Buehler?
I do care about this a lot, and I think this is a cool story. The NBA is really trying to go global by moving their preseason games, a couple being played in China, a couple being played in London. So this is a huge move to start bringing in some worldly players. This guy, if he could play based off of the videos I've seen, he's a 7'5", 360-pound center. This is the reincarnation of a Yao, of a Shaq, and who cares if he could actually shoot or anything? Put him in the middle of the paint and see what he can do. I think it's cool that the Kings were the team to do it, though, and this is why we should care. The Kings are the only NBA team whose majority owner is also of Indian descent.
Oh.
And they've already had experience doing stuff like this in the past. They signed Omri Caspi, who was the first Israeli-born NBA player, and he was a superstar in Israel. So it's exciting to see the Kings continuing to be more global. So, yes, I think we should care about that.
Agreed.
All right, and for you, Westbrook, recording another triple-double. This time his actual 10th of the season. They've already recalled one from him. But they lose the game again. Should we care?
That's what I think you should care about. Not to know. Obviously, you care about the fact that Russell Westbrook is having one of the best statistical seasons ever of all time. He's, you know, just absolutely crushing it. But for some reason, the Thunder keep losing games. And, you know, what Westbrook can't do at all. Like you said, Durant going down is a huge loss for them. So I guess, hell yeah, you should care about this for a multitude of reasons. You know, Westbrook is crushing. You should care about that MVP candidate, possibly, excuse me. But the Thunder's got to get their stuff together this year, man, and they can't do it. It shows how important Durant kind of is to that franchise.
Oh, without a doubt. It's just going to be exciting to see. If they can make the playoffs, then these triple-doubles will mean a whole lot more that he was putting on these kind of shows to lead his team to a championship or at least championship aspirations. But if they don't even make the playoffs, then I think these triple-doubles were just flashes in the pan.
I know how I feel about this next one, but how do you feel, John? Hell yeah, hell no, we should care. Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston are not going to be attending the draft.
Hell no, we shouldn't care. And that's a tough one for me, but the only reason I think this is story news, and a story for the news, I should say, is this would be bad for the NFL, not for these guys, because this could be the first time the number one draft pick and the number two draft pick are both not there to go on stage and receive their jersey, their hat, and all that, and take the picture with the commissioner. And this is a year where Roger Goodell could really use that photo op of these new guys coming in. I don't have a problem with their decision, though. Mariota wants to watch in Hawaii because he thinks it's better for his people down there and his community, and Jameis Winston wants to stay in Alabama and watch it with his grandma.
Yeah, no, I could not care less about this. I mean, I hope they all stay away from the draft. I hope every single player decides to stay at home and watch, because I don't want to see this on television for 2 days anymore.
It's such a long process now.
And like, it's really cool. Like, you know, I love having some, you know, fresh blood come in the league, and it's good to see who your team picks and, like, you know, complain about it or be happy about it, whatever. I don't need to watch it for a jillion hours on television. I don't care about it at all. I don't care about the questions they ask these guys after they, you know, are picked by a team. It never is interesting to me at all. They never have anything interesting or new to say. It's all the canned responses they've been given by the, you know, their handlers and things like that. Oh, happy to be here. Just happy to be drafted. Like, you know, great organization.
It's
I literally could not care less what they have to say. So I'm glad they can make it in the league. You know, they're fulfilling a lifelong dream. Good for them. I don't need to watch it. I hope everyone stays home.
All right. And let's continue on here. The Spurs just clinched the playoffs for their 18th consecutive year. You care?
I care, yeah. Hell yeah, I care about that. I mean, that's really good. That's a dynasty. They have been able to stay consistently good for the longest time now. And, you know, they should get a lot of credit for that. I think that's really hard to do in today's sports leagues where you have free agency and you have so much parity going on. I think it's really hard to maintain that kind of level of excellence for that long.
I think a lot of it speaks to the team chemistry there and the leadership of Popovich and that organization and the fact that they don't really use free agency. They build through the draft and keep their players, and they don't trade often. But you got to give most of the credit to Tim Duncan. From the moment he got drafted first overall, they have made the playoffs every single year he's been on that team. So I have to give him a ton of that credit.
How do you feel, John? Sidney Crosby just scored his 300th goal.
All right, it's no secret I'm not the biggest NHL fan or NHL guru, but... I hell no. Give me a call when he gets closer to 600. I feel like a ton of guys have scored 300. It's an impressive feat, I'm sure. I that's 300 more goals than I'd score in hockey. But give me a call when he gets a little higher up that list, and then maybe I'll give it some thought.
Yeah, I don't care as much. I mean, Sidney Crosby's kind of vilified in the league, and not many people like him. But he's one of the greatest talents in playing in the NHL right now. So I think it's good to see him get this milestone. I hope he has many, many more. Good on him. But it's not too great. I don't care that much at all.
All right, and for you, should we be caring about Tom Brady's vacation? All I've seen on SportsCenter is different pictures and different videos of what Tom Brady's up to his Instagram account. He's having a great vacation from all accounts, but should we be caring?
Tom Brady's vacation is better than your vacation. I've seen that's pretty good. But, yeah, that's. I think that's a thing already. If I put myself in the shoes of a Massachusetts sports fan, I'm a Patriots fan, diehard Patriots fan. I care so much about Tom Brady jumping off of a cliff. What are you thinking, Tom? How could you do that? I would be freaking out. If I see that video pop up on my newsfeed, I'm like, oh, what's Tom doing at the top of that waterfall? Oh, my God, he's jumping off of the waterfall. That is ridiculous. He is the sole, he's the literally the most pivotal member of that team, and here he is. I don't care if it's safe, whatever. It's not. You're jumping off a cliff. He could have hurt himself. He could be out for the rest of the season. That screws the Patriots over so much. I don't want my franchise player going on vacation and endangering himself like that. And I think it speaks to maybe Tom Brady's kind of is finishing his career up. I think he's wrapping up a little bit. I think this last championship has kind of made him a little more content with where he's at, where he's willing to, I think old Tom Brady, I think younger Tom Brady, would have sat and said, maybe I don't want to jump off this cliff. I don't want to. I have a lot of work to do. I want to go back and do this next season. I want to, be able to play and be with my guys. Maybe I'm not going to do this. I think now, Tom Brady's a little older. He's a little, he's getting to be that time. He's at the end of his career, and he's jumping off cliffs. And I would care tremendously as a New England sports fan.
I just care because I bet you it was Gronk's idea. So I'm a big fan of that. But other than that, the fact that I think the guy's on vacation. Let him. If we didn't have the era of Vine, YouTube, Twitter, all that, and I can't change that, but no one would know he's jumping off cliffs. How do we know guys weren't doing silly stuff in their off seasons?
We shouldn't be jumping
before?
Off cliffs. I don't care if you're both filming it.
You
should be jumping off cliffs. I mean, Aaron Boone with the Yankees that one time when he was playing pickup basketball blew out his knee, and that ended his career basically.
Chamberlain jumping on the trampoline.
You cannot as a multi-million dollar, athlete, jeopardize your season like that, whatever, you can have fun on your vacation. I'm not saying these guys should sit inside in a plastic bubble all the time, but you don't jump off a cliff. I'm sorry. You just don't do that. As the face of a franchise, you just don't jump off cliffs all willy-nilly like that. Tom Brady, what do you think? Who do you think you are? I am going to think, John, do you care? Hell yeah or hell no. Blake Griffin said that home court advantage won't really mean that much for the Clippers after they played the Warriors recently, and Warriors fans were even louder, even though they were on the road at the Clippers' home stadium there.
I care tremendously, so hell yeah. It's Oakland's not too far from obviously LA, the Staples Center Arena where they played that game, and like we said earlier, that's the game where Steph Curry crossed up CP3 and broke his ankles, and that's all.
It's pretty dirty.
He was getting trolled on the internet for that pretty hard, but
it's pretty dirty.
Yeah, I do think we should care about this because home court advantage does mean a ton in the playoffs. And if you don't have that six-man support helping the starting five, where are the Clippers going to go? And a team who just changed their image so much. You got rid of Donald Sterling, and now you brought in Steve Ballmer, this exciting owner, and this place they were supposed to be jumping for joy. You can't even out scream the Warriors fans at your home arena. Now, maybe that speaks more to the Warriors, but I think that's going to matter come playoff time.
I agree. I think you should definitely care about that. It's interesting. You got to have the support of your home fans.
All right, and this was a cool story I saw. The Red Wings defenseman Drew Miller took a skate to the face, cut it up pretty bad. Should we be caring about that?
You see that photo? Hell yeah, you care about that. That is brutal. That's brutal. Those are sharp instruments flying around out there. And he was at practice the next day and played in a game the day after that. So I think you should care about that kind of level of toughness. You know, times when you see guys like, I don't want to throw Derrick Rose under the bus here because obviously he's had his, you know, health issues with his knee and stuff.
Feel free to throw him under the bus.
Time to, you know, recover and things like that and taking time out, you know.
He's coming back, though, guys.
He's coming back.
They tell you all the time.
You got it. But this guy is tough as nails, right back out there, right on the ice. You know, it's playoff time. They're making a push, so that's, you know, where he wants to be out on the ice, and that kind of shows the passion for the game and the kind of toughness there. I think you care about that.
I care tremendously because hockey is so brutal. And seeing these pictures, like I said, I'm not a huge hockey guy, but I have to respect the toughness of these players. What was that? In 1979 is when they started instituting wearing a helmet, and players who played before that got grandfathered in. And I just saw the story. The GM of the Edmonton Oilers was the last guy to play without a helmet. He played 18 more seasons after they made that a rule. So, I mean, we clearly didn't have the neurological knowledge we do now about the head trauma of these athletes, but these guys are insane. So, yes, I do care about this guy going out, cutting up his face, and still managing to play. And the one I want to toss you just to finish this up.
Mm-hmm.
This was a good story one of our producers handed us earlier. In the women's NIT, West Virginia was playing Villanova, and West Virginia was leading 73-66. Now, Emily Lear, who was a guard for Villanova, she had 999 career points at school going into this game. Down 7 with 7 seconds left on the clock, West Virginia, who was leading, fouled Emily Lear to give her a chance. Intentionally fouled her, sent her to the line so she could score her 1,000th point. Should we care about that?
Yes, you should definitely care about that. And here's why I think you hear so many negative stories coming out of college athletics about people doing the wrong thing, you know, people doing the terrible things on every level of sports. It's always good to hear a story like that. You know, you're not going to win. You're not going to lose the game, obviously. You want this girl to get 1,000 points. That's a milestone. You know, sportsmanship is not a lost art here. You know, it's not dead. It's always good to see, you know, a team kind of think of the bigger picture here. And congrats to Emily Lear as well for getting that, hitting that milestone. So I'm glad that, you know, that could happen. I definitely care about that, and I hope, you know, I continue to hear stories like that.
Absolutely. Congratulations, Emily Lear. But yeah, you're right. Sportsmanship, it seems at times it is a dying breed here, and people care more about winning. And no, I want my team to care more about winning. I could say that now, but as being an actual person and a casual fan, it is great to see these kind of stories. I remember one, you know, the girl who hit the home run and they carried her around, the opposite team carried her around the bases so she could, the home run would count. But these stories are just great to hear after you hear the ones about the teams that run up the score 100-0 in a basketball game. So it is very impressive to hear this. And that is our segment, Should I Care? Hell yeah! Or
hell no! All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Fast Track with John and Zach. I hope you keep tuning in. We're going to keep doing it. We're going to keep getting better, right, John?
Of course. That's the plan, at least.
Yeah, let's keep doing that. Thank you again for listening. Thanks to our producers, Matt Roque, Alice Kogot, for sticking around and helping us out today. Do a lot of stuff behind the scenes to make us better as well. And we're going to keep trying to bring you a good product.
All right. And make sure you check us out on Twitter at FT Sports Talk. Send us an email at thefasttracksports@gmail.com. And check back to see when our next podcast is coming out.
All right, thanks again, guys, and we'll see you next week.